This is the Future of HR Podcast, episode 171.
Leaders will often ask me questions like, well, is there a sequence or what are the rules? And what I always tell them is there are some principles that kind of underlie this approach that we teach. So one thing that I like to share with leaders is not our job to solve. It is our job to start. So we are not looking for a big raging problem that we need to quote unquote solve. What we are looking for is points of pain or opportunity and asking ourselves, what is the smallest step that I could take most simply that would create a little bit of change, a little bit of momentum? Let's try that. Let's see how that lands. If it landed well, let's take the next step. I always like to say it is not about finding best practices. It is about finding the right practices. And those have to be defined by the teams in your organization that know the work, that know the customers, that see the points of friction or opportunity. Those are the practices we need to be unlocking.
How can leaders redesign work to boost both engagement and well-being? Why is fit for purpose more important than best practice when it comes to designing work? Hi, I'm your host, JP Elliott, and this is the Future of HR Podcast, the only podcast whose mission is to inspire the next generation of HR leaders. On each episode, I interview successful HR executives and thought leaders who are reimagining, rethinking, and leading our field into the future. During our candid conversations, you will learn about their career journeys, their lessons learned along the way, and their insights on how to take our field and most importantly, your career to the next level. Over the past 3 years on Future of HR, I've talked with more than 150 CHROs and HR thought leaders about what separates good HR leaders from great ones. And one thing's clear, the best HR leaders see themselves as business leaders with HR expertise. But here's the challenge. Most HR leaders aren't taught to think, communicate, and operate that way. That's why I've created the NextGen HR Accelerator, a four-week intensive, live virtual development experience designed specifically for HR directors and senior managers who want to have more impact and influence. After 4 weeks of focused learning, participants continue their development journey with a 360-degree assessment, two coaching sessions with me, and peer learning with HR leaders from top companies. Over the course of the program, we focus on building your business and financial acumen, thinking strategically, influencing executives with impact, and creating HR strategies that deliver measurable business results. Over 100 HR leaders from companies like Nike, Prudential, AbbVie, McDonald's, Cardinal Health, Verizon, Corning, and more have graduated from the program, and now it's your turn. Our next cohort starts January 27th and enrollment closes January 14th with limited space available. This isn't just about your next role. It's about shaping the kind of HR leader you want to be. If you're ready to take the next step in your HR career, visit futureofhr.com. And if you're a CHRO, you already know your team's impact shapes the future of your organization. That's why I also partner with companies to design custom HR capability programs that build these skills at scale. You can learn more at futureofhr.com. And with that, my guest this week is Rachel Cook. Rachel's a former HR executive who believes work doesn't have to break people to produce results. She founded Lead Above Noise to help leaders escape the impossible bind of delivering more with less while keeping their teams healthy and engaged. And rather than bolting on wellness programs onto overload systems, she helps leaders rebuild how work gets done with their teams. Through her Work Better by Design framework, which we're going to talk about today, she helps leaders test and implement practical changes and reduce friction, sharpen focus, and strengthen both performance and well-being. Rachel delivers this through keynotes, workshops, and coaching programs, and she's worked with leaders at American Express, Cisco, Splunk, Takeda, Pharmaceuticals, and many others. She's also the host of McMillan's popular Modern Mentor podcast, and you should check that out. And in my conversation with Rachel today, we're going to discuss why leaders are under more pressure than ever before, how leaders can redesign work while increasing engagement, well-being, and productivity, and why leaders should be searching for right practices, not best practices. I'd love to hear your thoughts on this episode, so drop me a line and say hello. And now let's jump into my conversation with Rachel. Rachel, welcome to the Future of HR podcast. How are you?
I'm great, JP. Thank you so much for the invitation. I'm delighted to be here.
Yeah, I am delighted to talk with you. And we're going to talk a couple different topics today, but one we're going to get into a little bit deep is work design, which I know you're super passionate about. But where I wanted to start is that I know you work a lot of different industries, a lot of different companies, and I'm just curious, kind of what are you noticing these days that maybe is different from a couple of years ago?
I am dipping in and out of a lot of different industries. I know every industry thinks it is unique. In some ways, they are correct, but in some ways, people are people and work is work. And what I'm really seeing across the board these days is we are kind of exhausted. We are a little bit broken down in spirit. We are struggling with trust and we are struggling with connection and we're feeling really overwhelmed by the state of the world. There's a lot of struggles.
Yeah, we all go back and we point to the pandemic, but I feel like we have just sort of not taken ourselves out of like super drive since the pandemic. There's just been one thing after the other. There is a lot going on. And now with AI, I feel like that's just this other added pressure of, what does it mean for me? Do I need to become an AI expert? Is AI going to take my job? Is it going to impact my job? And every company's on a different continuum there. So some companies are really far down that path. Some are just barely starting. Are you seeing anything around that as well in terms of the technology impacting work?
Lucky for my clients, they are smart enough to know not to ask me too many technical questions. But in terms of AI in the workplace, its impact on people, I'm definitely seeing people feel anxious about it. They have questions. They have uncertainties. I'm also seeing a fair amount of frustration where people are like, I see something really interesting I could be doing with AI, but my company policy prohibits, or we need to be careful with data. And so I think there's a tremendous amount that needs to be figured out just from a kind of HR compliance perspective. But in general, I think that the organizations that are doing the best so far, it's pretty early days, but from my vantage point, the organizations that are doing the best are the ones that are setting their guardrails. Here's what we do and don't upload into AI, but within the confines of those guardrails, go play, go experiment, go try things. And yeah, we'll be open to listening. And I think that's the best way that I'm seeing people use it right now.
Yeah, I think that makes a lot of sense in the idea that it's really a mindset, culture shift around AI almost versus then the tool. It's really about how does that organization think about a lot of other areas, I bet, as well. Because it's not that you're just all of a sudden be less conservative or more excited about AI if you're not taking other kind of experiments or risks in your business before.
That's exactly right. I think the companies that generally have a stronger capacity and a stronger appetite for innovation in general are the ones that are giving their employees more room to play with AI.
And I want to go back to the conversation you said there in the beginning that there's people are feeling overwhelmed. There's a lot going on. I'm curious more about how do you support organizations and help them just maybe double click a little bit of what you're doing to help organizations and leaders get past the tough part.
Yeah, I mean, I wish I had the solution to getting past it, right? I think we are in it. We are in it and it is here to stay, however we define the it. I think what I'm really focusing on with leaders and organizations is helping them understand how we can build more strategies into the fabric of the ways that we're working, such that we are actually addressing these things, helping to support our people through these things. And we can certainly talk more about that as we get into work design, which is really what I'm focused on a great deal these days.
Leaders are really feeling this a lot, right? People leaders are being asked to do a lot more these days. We've had at least high publicity organizations who made the news recently that they are cutting middle management or intend to cut more middle management out, and that spans and layers should be larger than what they traditionally have been, which is really kind of that 1-to-8 ratio has been really the best practice. But there's many organizations are now moving to like 1-to-15, even for kind of white collar work, which was typically kind of actually more customer service oriented. There's actually some real science behind this. So I'm not sure I think it's a good idea. I do not actually think it's a good idea that organizations are doing this. I think they'll backfire in some ways. But I understand that that is decisions they're making. So there's more on leaders than just kind of they had before. How do you think about this? How do you help leaders think about this kind of impossible task of do more with less?
Yeah, I think leaders are really feeling the strain for so many reasons. The one that you mentioned is certainly one of them, right? We're making their jobs bigger. We're setting the expectations of them higher. We are asking for them to drive more results from their teams. And also, we are asking them to be responsible in some way for their team's engagement, for their team's well-being. What I'm seeing a lot of leaders struggle with is this experience of those two poles being at odds. It's almost like a tug of war. Leaders are having to choose every minute, am I doing the work right now, or am I doing the engagement and well-being stuff? And doing one necessarily kind of takes you out of the other. It's really hard to achieve all of those things at once. And the way that I'm working with organizations these days is that I'm asking them to look at how they are working and look for ways that we can make the work itself more regenerative so that we are actually infusing strategies for well-being and engagement into the work rather than bolting them onto the outside. Said differently, what I'm seeing leaders do is they are churning and grinding and they're asking their teams for more and more. And then when we hit the edge, there's a wellness program, there's a team yoga session, an ice cream party, there's some sort of, we run surveys and ask questions once a year. And these are all kind of strategies that live outside of the work that are designed to help us recover from the damage the work is doing to us. And what I think is so much more compelling is asking the question, how can we be working better such that we are enabling stronger results and achieving engagement and well-being all inside of the work? And this is what I feel really passionate about these days.
Yeah, I think it's a really good insight that we sometimes try to break this up and think that we can make up for a really tough quarter with a pizza party. doesn't really work that way. So I know you're passionate about this idea of kind of work design. Talk more about what work design is to you. What makes that unique? How do you think about it?
Sure. So the way that I think about work design is I work with leaders. We have a framework and we have a methodology, and our focus is on helping leaders find ways to create the conditions in which their teams can do four things and do them really well. And the first is deliver, which might sound absurd when we think about the work. Of course, we want our teams to be able to deliver. But what happens time and again is that organizations invest time and money into finding the best talent. They bring in the best talent. And then we inadvertently get in our own way. We bring this talent in, they're excited, but then what do they encounter? They encounter processes that are broken. They encounter that they have challenges accessing the data or the tools. We bottleneck decisions, all of these things. We're not doing them with intention, but we need to find these things and strip them out of the work. By doing that, we enhance results and we reduce frustration, which contributes to well-being. But beyond delivering, we also need our people to be able to develop inside the context of the work. We often think of development as programs that happens outside of the work, and I think there is absolutely value in those. But I think there are missed opportunities to be doing more development in the fabric of the work, not just development for development's sake, but development in service of the work. So what are the skills and capabilities that we need now and in the future? How can we be doing more experimentation safely, like we were talking about with AI? How can we be leveraging each other's skills and expertise more? How can we be peer coaching more effectively? How can we be asking better questions that send us down more curious paths? The next one is connect. We need to help our people connect. We know that we are in a loneliness epidemic, and that has a negative impact on our well-being. We know that inclusion and belonging matter. But what we don't talk about enough is that connection is not just about the human spirit. When we do it right and well, it serves the work. So I'm not talking about those team pizza parties that you mentioned. I'm talking about, what are our communication forums and cadences like? Are we just asking people to check a box, or are we asking honest questions? Are we legitimately making space for people to ask the quote unquote dumb questions, to flag the risk, to highlight the blind spot? And when we do these things, we start to pull down silos, we start to collaborate more effectively, we start to build more holistic products and solutions. So it really is about both the engagement and the well-being and the results. And the last pillar is thrive. We need our people to deliver, develop, connect, and thrive. Thriving is really about balance, recognition, wellness, but it's also about preserving our best energy for the right pieces of work so that our organizations are getting our most creative selves, right? Our most high quality energy. When people feel recognized for their work, they want to work harder. And that doesn't have to be monetary. I tell people, a lot of us talk about the importance of a thank you, and I think a thank you can go a long way. But an amazing way to recognize somebody is to say something like, JP, I noticed that you've been doing some great work in this space, or you've really been learning in this space. Would you mind coming to talk to my team about that? Or would you mind advising on this work that I'm doing? By doing this, I'm actually getting more out of you, but you feel amazing. You feel seen. You feel that your expertise is recognized. I get the benefit of it. And so I think we need to be thinking more creatively about how we are working, such that the work itself is empowering us to be more engaged and to feel more well.
Yeah, I like the framework, and I think it's a really good mental model for people leaders to think about how can they do more, help their team get more out of work, perform more, probably higher level, but also really feel more connected to the work. I'm curious though, Rachel, as you talk through there, are there areas that are easier or you see that like, this is where most leaders lean into and then they miss this other part? How do you see that balance and which one do we need to focus more on?
Leaders will often ask me questions like, well, is there a sequence or what are the rules? And what I always tell them is there are some principles that kind of underlie this approach that we teach. So one thing that I like to share with leaders is not our job to solve. It is our job to start. So we are not looking for a big raging problem that we need to quote unquote solve. What we are looking for is points of pain or opportunity and asking ourselves, what is the smallest step that I could take most simply that would create a little bit of change, a little bit of momentum? Let's try that. Let's see how that lands. If it landed well, let's take the next step. It may be a little bit of a cheat answer, but I think the answer is it really depends on what your teams need. I always like to say it is not about finding best practices. It is about finding the right practices. And those have to be defined by the teams in your organization that know the work, that know the customers, that see the points of friction or opportunity. Those are the practices we need to be unlocking.
Yeah, I love that you underline the fact that not best practice, but the right practice, right? Or fit for purpose practices that make sense for your organization. Because we just, too often we're looking for the one solution, the one magic bullet kind of thing that's going to solve it. And it just isn't going to fit because what's happening in your organization will be different than what's happening in my organization. And there's some similarities to where people are people, but the work and how work gets done culturally can be so different. Well, you've given a good overview of like what can happen, what I think the great things that could be a result of designing work the right way for leaders. What about when it's not designed the right way?
I would argue in many cases, just look around and you tell me. I think a lot of organizations are living in a realm where work isn't well designed or isn't as well designed as it could be. And what I see happening is people are band-aiding broken processes. They are steamrolling over poor collaborators and doing all of these workarounds. And by doing these things, we make the work less efficient. And we feel frustrated when we don't intentionally design work so that we're building trust and connection. We feel mistrust, which means we work within our silos. We have assumptions of malice of our colleagues, right? We feel unsupported. We actually don't do a good job of when you have upstream people and downstream people in an organization that aren't talking to each other, you've got salespeople making promises that an operations team is now going to have to deliver on, that feels really hard and painful. When we don't have the opportunity for sales to ask operations what is possible and for operations to ask sales, what do our customers want? What do our customers most want? These conversations are the ones that help us build trust, have a stronger positive experience, but also fuel the work forward. I know I'm a little soapboxy on this. Sorry, but I really think there's a lot sitting here.
No, there is. And I think there's no one out there that's designing work with the intent to design work badly. That's not the case, right? But what happens is that, especially our big organizations, they've been around for a while. Sometimes it's tribal knowledge of how things get done. Sometimes there's SOPs. It depends on what part of the organization, et cetera. And then it just gets complicated. We don't have good role clarity. Sometimes we don't design the right cross-functional collaboration points that need to happen. It's not thoughtfully designed because there's so much going on because people are trying to deliver, not just design the work. how do you kind of reconcile those two ideas? I mean, if you had tips on, okay, maybe my work isn't perfectly designed right and I want to be better, what might be one or two things that a leader can do to assess their area, how they're doing work, and maybe make that different or better?
Everything you're saying is true and real. I've worked a fair amount in Fortune 500 companies, and I understand complexity and what it takes to turn a ship. What I think is really powerful about the concept of work design, or at least the way that I teach it is very democratic, and it can happen and it should happen at any altitude. So I don't see this necessarily as a top-down initiative that needs to start in the executive suites and find its way down. A leader of a team of three on the front lines can be looking at what is within, I like to call this idea of focus on your locus. So I like to tell a leader, wherever you are in an organization, there are things you can't do and there are things that you can. So find the pain points your team sees or find the opportunities your team sees. Acknowledge what you can't do, but focus on what you can do. And there's almost always something we can do. Start there. And if every leader at every altitude started doing that, started making just one change, you would see a huge volume of positivity. And from there, you create this positive contagion. I know that's a dangerous word to use these days, but it's a little bit of change and a small number of practices that we experiment with and then share them across the organization. I think it can be a very grounds up positive change.
Yeah, I love that. I love the focus on your locus. It's good. I mean, I think that's such a great idea because you're right. If every leader went to their team and said, hey, what's one change that we could make to make our team more effective? You won't get just one idea. You'll probably get five, but you implement two of those ideas. It might be, well, let's only have one meeting a week and the agenda goes out ahead of time. It can be so simple. Like, oh, let's use this shared folder on these types of files. Great. But a lot of times we're not asking. Leaders aren't always asking. And I think that's the big unlock is like, wait, just go ask your team. They know what'll make their life easier.
And I would add to that, so a couple things. Number one, we have to ask, but we have to ask better questions. I talk to leaders all the time who say to me, well, I'm asking my team for feedback. They don't have any. And I like to tell them, then you're not asking the right question. So when we say, hey, team, do you have feedback for me? It is much safer for them to say no. But when you say, hey, team, you have access to blind spots that I can't see. And there is an imperative that you help me see what I can't. So tell me three things that I can't see that are either making your life more complicated or that is a missed opportunity. When we change the framing of the question, we make it much safer because now, no, I have no feedback is no longer an appropriate response. So I think it's important to ask the question in the right way. The other thing I want to say, going back to the comment you made earlier about let's just use this shared folder or let's only have one meeting a week. One of the other things I hear from leaders a lot is, well, I don't ask my team because I'm afraid they will ask me for things I can't do. And this is where I come back to this focus on your locus. Maybe your team is asking you to cancel a bunch of meetings and you can't do that. But can you shrink the meetings by 5 minutes so people have time to use the bathroom in between? Something that small can just be a starting place, can show them, I'm listening. I hear what you want. I hear what you wish. Here's what I can't do, but here is what I can. And that is where it begins.
Yeah, I love that. That's sort of like, well, I can't do this, but I could do that, which I think is a great way to help people understand. Like, I'm hearing you. I'm trying hard. I'm going to definitely compromise. I just can't give you everything you'd love to have. So even that 5 minutes back makes a lot of sense. And it sounds like you have a lot of stories around this, Rachel. I mean, could you share a time where you've seen a company that's made some small shifts that's really kind of helped the work design to be much more effective or productive?
I have worked with companies in a variety of industries. There's going to be a little bit of theme here, but I was working with a hospital at one point that was facing a major staffing shortage, a national staffing shortage amongst nurses that may still be in place. I'm not quite sure. But at the time, they were dealing with major burnout in their nursing staff, feeling like there's nothing we can do about this. We can't change the fact that there is a staffing shortage. And so we went in and we had some conversations with the nurses. We were asking them, how are you experiencing this burnout? And one of the things that we learned from them is that they weren't able to use the bathroom because they were so short-staffed. It was nearly impossible to find somebody to cover your station when you needed to go. So they just weren't going. And because they were not eating and they were not drinking. And I will let you guess what kind of impact that had on patient care and patient experience. And by raising this insight to leadership, we were able to help them recognize you cannot solve the staffing shortage, but what you probably can do is implement a bathroom schedule. And that sounds absurd, but they did this. And did that solve the problem? No, but it really made a difference. Suddenly their nurses were able to eat and drink and they felt human again and they felt heard, they felt seen. I had another organization, a retail organization, that was really struggling with its sales teams. They were struggling to hit their targets, and the organization believed they were going to have to do a fair-sized overhaul of their talent and then maybe a significant training. But we went in and again had some conversations, and we uncovered that in some cases, what the salespeople were saying was, our dashboards are holding on to metrics that are obsolete. So we're still being incentivized to make a certain number of calls. We're measured on call time, but our customers are begging us, please stop calling us. We don't want to be called. Send us an email, shoot us a text. But there was no forum in which the salespeople who had access to the customers were able to bring this up because we're not asking. We made a couple of changes to the dashboard metric. Did it solve everything? Absolutely not, but it started them on a better path. So then from there, they were able to implement more additional changes, little bits at a time. And when we have this incremental approach where the intelligence that we're using is coming from the people doing the work, the people feeling the pain, talking to the customers, experiencing the processes, feeling that mistrust or disconnection, when we let them inform the path forward, the path itself gets smarter, but they are also deeply engaged in it because they've built it with you.
Yeah, that's a really important point. The idea of getting the teams involved so they feel like this is being done with them, not to them. It's just so critical, like you talked about. And those are really good examples. As you think about from a leader, team leader buying into this idea, we talked already about asking better feedback. I think it was a great example of how to ask for feedback. What else would you suggest that people leaders start to do to redesign work?
What they need to be doing is, first and foremost, just watching, just observing, noting as a leader, what are the questions you find yourself getting on repeat? What are the frustrations that you are seeing your employees navigate through? And what is it that you want to achieve? So for example, if you're in an organization that is maybe feeling a little stagnant and you're wanting to see a little bit more innovation, what I like to tell leaders is don't focus on the end goal. Have an end goal, have a vision where your organization is massively innovating. But I like to tell leaders, pick a couple of what I call glimmers, indicators that you're on the right path, and start running some small experiments and watch for those glimmers. So if you're looking to have a much more innovative team or organization, in my opinion, that starts with people asking better questions, people speaking up more in meetings, meetings being more of a dialogue or a brainstorm versus just an update. So I think if leaders observe, if they have a point of view on where they would like to see their team go, and if they have clarity on what are going to be some of the indicators, because the needle will move on your engagement, on your well-being, but not overnight, right? You have to implement a bunch of different experiments that will accumulate. And what you need along the way are these glimmers to tell you, am I on the right track?
Yeah, the glimmers idea is a good one. I mean, you don't have to go too far. We're talking about some ways, baby steps. Hey, we're on the right path. We're seeing some progress. That progress could be really small. Hey, like, let's not expect overnight. That is hard, though, for corporate America, especially bigger companies where we expect perfection. We expect things to change very quickly. It's not always realistic. I'm wondering, as I think about this and the idea of work design, there might be some people leaders, and our HR leaders might be working with people leaders who say, well, that all makes sense, Rachel, but I've got leaders who feel like I really shouldn't connect with my team. I'm here to drive work. There's definitely a separation of work-life and balance. And yes, they need to have some work-life, but we just got to get the job done. I can't really worry about those other areas. What would you say to leaders who are feeling that they shouldn't help people connect, that they shouldn't worry about the well-being as much because it's just all about the results?
Yeah, I would just ask them how that's working for them. I'll be honest, I've been around leaders like that. And in my experience, and I'm sure there are examples to the contrary, but in my experience, on balance, those leaders are generally not getting the results that they want. They are not attracting the talent that they want to be attracting. If that is working for you, I'm not here to convince you otherwise. I'm much more interested in speaking to the leaders who believe that humanity has a place in our work and that is willing to believe that when we allow humanity to thrive, it actually can improve the work. I want to talk to leaders who are at least willing to give that a try.
Yeah, I think it's a great reframe. Just saying, hey, do you think you could get even more out of the team? They work a little bit harder. That look like if you try this approach, see what happens. I think that's a really a good reframe. I guess stepping back, Rachel, what do you most want leaders to understand about the relationship between getting results and people?
I want leaders to ask themselves, when have you done your best work? Think about the idea you generated that you're most proud of, or the initiative that you led that was the most successful. And just ask yourself how you felt during that experience. And again, there can be examples to the contrary, but I would be willing to bet that most of us, when we are reflective and honest with ourselves, we will recognize that our own best work happened during moments or seasons when we felt good, we felt excited, we felt connected, we felt well. I don't know about you, but like, I do not deliver great things when I am exhausted or when I don't even understand the purpose of what I'm doing in the first place. I would start there.
Great call to action. I agree with you completely. Last question for you, Rachel. Ask all my guests this question. What is one word or phrase you believe will define the future of HR over the next 5 to 10 years?
Humanity first.
Perfect. Humanity first. Rachel, thank you for being on the podcast. Your podcast is Modern Mentor. People need to go check that out. Great to have you on Future of HR.
This was a pleasure, JP. Thank you so much.
Thanks again to Rachel for an insightful conversation on how to redesign work to drive performance and well-being. As always, you can go to futureofhr.com to view all of our past episodes and learn more about our mission to inspire the next generation of HR leaders. And if you enjoyed this episode of Future of HR, I think you'll enjoy my Future of HR newsletter, which is the only newsletter that's focused on helping you to elevate your career and business impact. Go to futureofhr.com to subscribe and be sure to download my HR Leaders Blueprint, which is 18 pages of real-world advice from over 100 HR thought leaders with simple, actionable, and proven strategies to advance your career. And with next week being the Christmas holiday week, we will not have a new episode, but I will replay one of my favorite episodes that you likely have missed. I hope that you have a great holiday season, and thanks for being part of the Future of HR community.